That's what I feel is much more effective because it captivates us in a way that books do too. When we invest in a character, we invest in a story. And it's the same for your entrepreneurial journey.
Welcome to The Mountain Pass, a podcast about lifelong learning, curiosity, and our wonderful brain. Topics we love at Alp Audio. But this isn't a podcast about Alp the product. Rather, it's conversations driven by our curiosity.
Arvid Kahl is a bootstrapper, author, podcaster, builder in public, and generally a great person to chat with for an hour about all of these topics. His background is in software development, and in 2019 he sold Feedback Panda, a company he built with his partner. Since then, he's been focusing on helping other entrepreneurs via building in public, a podcast, and two books, The Embedded Entrepreneur and Zero to Sold. There's a lot to learn from Arvid's writing, but I just enjoyed our in-depth conversation on how to build, what sharing your journey is like, and fantasy novels. Enjoy.
Arvid, welcome to the Mountain Pass. It's great to have you here.
Thank you so much. I've been really looking forward to having this conversation with you today.
Likewise. And we've even got a question or two in from Twitter, which I'm excited about. But before going into your background and what you do and all of that, I actually wanted to start out with a concept that I heard on one of your podcasts. And I thought this would be a good place to start because this is going to be a conversation about storytelling, character building. And this concept you were talking about, which struck home with me, was really about how builders in public should be reading fiction and fantasy. I'm making my way through this like 20 book series of the Malazan Book of the Fallen, which is this epic fantasy series. And so that really struck home. So let's start with that. Why do you think so? What does Brandon Sanderson and the Stormlight Archive have to do with building in public and entrepreneurship?
Right. Well, I believe that fiction is written by people who have understood people, right? Like you can look into any popular fiction series and you will have characters in there that are fleshed out, that have their own little problems, that have their own heroes or villains journey, whatever it is, they have a journey. And every interesting character in these successful fiction books overcomes problems, overcomes challenges, and builds methods of coping, methods of improving themselves, methods for accelerating their own growth. Whatever it is, if you find popular fiction or well-written fiction, you will find this journey of growth in almost all of the characters. If you look at the not-so-popular and not-so-good fiction, you will find very bland, very stale, very non-growth-oriented characters. That's kind of how I distinguish that. And for people who want to accomplish something, want to build something, entrepreneurs, or even just creatives, anybody who wants to do something that hasn't been done before, this is both motivation and instruction at the same time. I feel whenever I read fiction, whatever it is, fantasy, sci-fi, or like even like crime, whatever stories, even though I'm not that interested in that particular genre, but whenever I read fiction that is captivating and shows me people overcoming certain obstacles, I learn something, even though it may not be applicable to my particular business, my particular kind of thing that I'm trying to build. It's just seeing other people succeeding, even if they're fictional, that is super interesting. And you have these kind of mechanisms and strategies within fiction, like the hero's journey, or like, you know, the point of no return, and the you catastrophe, where things just turn out for the best, and all these little things that just keep you inspired and that make you want to accomplish the same things in your own life that you see popular fictional characters accomplish in their own. And often what I see in fiction is that people start trusting other people. People start feeling that they don't have to do this alone. There is a Fellowship of the Ring. There is a group of people that can help each other accomplish a common goal. Right? People find teams, they build teams, they quite literally set up a team and then go and try to get their business objective done, right? Like obviously like throwing the ring into Mordor or carrying the ring into Mordor and throwing it into Mount Doom. Now that is a business objective. There's an outcome, clear outcome in the path and a strategy. So I mean, as funny as that is, to me, this is always very inspirational, and it shows you how you can do things and overcome these little roadblocks that you have in your own mind. I cannot do this. It's too hard, or I've never done this before. I don't have the credentials. Well, every hero in every story has the same doubts, and they overcome them, and they reach their goals. So that's what fiction does for me. And that's, I think, what fiction can do for founders, because most of us in the entrepreneurial space, we are very much primed to read nonfiction books that supposedly help us become better at what we should be doing. Learn things to then apply to our businesses, hacks and strategies and frameworks, which is not wrong. But it's a very narrow view on what you could read to help you become a better entrepreneur or a better person in the first place. So I think expanding this into fiction allows you to look into how other people have come to understand humans, and then transport that back into your professional life, whatever that may be.
I love, you're an author of nonfiction books. So it's interesting that, you know, you're talking about the power of fiction for learning things like that. Those points really struck home for me on the aspect of like what, you know, what we get out of it personally, in terms of the inspiration and just making our days more enjoyable. For me, I vividly recall up until this day, one of the characters that inspired me, probably in many, many others, I'm not so unique in this, is Raistlin Majere from the Dragonlance series, who's kind of this iconoclastic wizard. And really, I remember reading Dragonlance when I was growing up and really being inspired by this bookish mage who was kind of shady. He turns out to be completely evil, but because he's kind of an outcast and being inspired by a lot of the things that he went through. And so there's definitely that power that fictional characters have to inspire us. There's also just the act of like escapism, right? Founding, being an entrepreneur is not easy. I can't shut off from my job. And the only way that I actually find myself able to shut off is reading a good fiction book, much more than watching anything on TV. It helps me escape it. I'm wondering if you think there are actual like practical tools that we can get from reading fiction, because you started on that a little bit. And for me, I think I see clear, you know, lessons to be learned from storytelling and narrative building, and building a pitch is not that different from building a story, right? And who is that hero? You know, how do you structure that? So I'm kind of curious on your thoughts on that.
Oh, that's an interesting one. I believe that, like, particularly when you're building in public, when you're building a business and you're sharing your entrepreneurial journey, everything you learn and everything you encounter, your experiments and all that stuff, that's kind of like the shortest definition of building in public that I have. If you do this in front of an audience, your fellow founders, your potential customers, your potential partners, and whoever is watching, having a narrative, having something for people to hook into is definitely beneficial, right? That there are many ways to talk about what you're doing in public. Let's just say on Twitter, which is where I do my building in public, you can share little updates of what you're doing. You can share just the numbers, or you can share your thoughts and your fears and your feelings and involve people in not just into the outcomes, but into the actual inputs into your process. And that's what I feel is much more effective, because it captivates us in a way that books do too. When we invest in a character, we invest in a story. And it's the same for your entrepreneurial journey. If you see somebody starting to build a business, that they say, I have this idea, or I know these people and they really need help, and now I just want to build a business around that. And you see this on day one or day 10 or whatever, right? And then over the next couple of weeks and months, you see them struggling and trying and experimenting to build a business. And then 2 months later, they have their first customer. And then 3 months after that, they have their 50th customer. And then at some point, they ask for, I don't know, somebody to fill out a survey or to give them a shout out on Twitter or something. You are so invested in their story that you want them to succeed. So you will help them. So if you flip this around, you are now the founder and you want people to help you. Well, make them invest into your journey. Get them to cheer for you, because you are who they want to be. or you who are somebody who is like them on the same path, maybe a few steps ahead, maybe a few steps behind. That's kind of the power of the narrative of your own journey, is that other people find themselves in it. They find themselves in an aspirational way because they want to be you, or they find themselves as a like a kind of a memory of their own past in your story. Whatever it is, doesn't matter, right? They are here right now, they have been there, or they want to be there. If they find a way to hook into your story, or you find a way to hook them into your story, they invest their time, their just their emotional bond with you, a relationship is being built, then over time, this creates incredible opportunities. And I mentioned like three versions, right? You have fellow founders who can help you out if you are in a rut, if you have a problem and you need insight, you need a perspective. Super helpful. If you just share what you're doing and you share your fears and your doubts and even your celebrations and the moments of like jubilant joy or whatever it is, you will always have somebody watching. And if you have a question, they can help you right there. That's super helpful for a founder on this kind of entrepreneurial level. But if you look at your potential customers, here are people who've seen you put so much effort into helping people like them over time with all the energy you have. Like if they have to choose between you and the faceless competitor, who do you think they're going to be choosing, right? It's quite obvious that their investment in your journey will also make them prone to support you by becoming a customer. And then partners, you have potential partnerships with other businesses in the same space, businesses in different spaces where there's synergy effects. If you don't talk to them, if they don't see you, they will think of somebody else. So by being present, by leaving evidence of your ambition, I think that is the phrase that captures it most succinctly, I feel. By just throwing out evidence and leaving it there for other people to find it, you increase your chances for those opportunities. And that's why having this consistent, ongoing narrative of your own journey is so valuable. And it can come with twists, obviously, like any good story. There can be a pivot somewhere in there. Try to build, like, I don't know, a business that is supposed to help one particular customer, but then you notice they don't really need it. So you pivot to another customer using the same product, or build a different product for the same customer. It doesn't matter what it is. There can be the kind of catastrophic moment where everything is almost kind of imploding. And then you make a little switch and all of a sudden you're now serving the right customer. There's a founder on Twitter called Peter Zoom from Denmark. And over, I think, the last 3 or 4 years, he's been building a product called Branch, which is a WordPress deployment system. And he noticed that he didn't really find his customers. He had a super hard time selling it to people. And then at some point, he just thought, I need to pivot this. But he's already been building in public with this product. Instead of continuing to build this product, forcing it into his audience, he said, I'm going to build something completely different. And he utilized his existing audience of, it must have been tens of thousands of people following, or maybe thousands of people following at this point, I don't really know. It was like a year ago. And then he built a little competitor to Typeform. And his tool is called Reform. It's a form builder on the web. And compared to Branch, this one just shot right to the moon, because he knew exactly what problem he wanted to solve. He had people surrounding him who had this problem too, other founders, people who need insight into, like, or build surveys for other people to just give them product feedback or whatever it is. And he built this with his audience. Like, I remember having a chat with him, just like we're having now, where he was introducing this idea to me and he asked me about what I would need in a form builder. Because I also need information from my customers, which are my followers. Right? I write books for the people that I want to help. So they follow me. I can sometimes sell them a book. So I need to know who my audience is and what they're thinking. And a survey tool is a great idea for that. So we had a conversation about this. And now I see Reform just taking off, because he has found the right people to help him build the tool for themselves. Like he was building it with and for them at the same time. And that was a major pivot from building a WordPress deployment tool to a form generator. That's a completely different business. But Peter has only benefited from that. Like, nobody stopped following him because he's now building a different business. People have been following it even more because he had the courage to change midway. And that is a great story. Like, literally a great story, because I can tell it. It's not even my story, but it's his. And he can leverage that for his business, for his personal brand. He came out much stronger by being honest and saying, this isn't working, I'm doing something else. And that's the power of this narrative too. And you see it all over the place when people build in public. It doesn't have to be a pivot, could be something different. But sharing those moments of doubt and uncertainty and then acting and going through it and coming out stronger is incredibly alluring. Like, you will find an audience with those kind of things because people love to see when somebody overcomes obstacles. And that's really why sharing stories is so relevant today.
Yeah, that's a great, great point, that building that narrative turns you into the hero of the journey, and people who follow you are your readers, and you're bringing them along, and they don't know what's going on. And you know, you're the character, you have your goal, you have what you want to achieve, and there are complications and conflict that comes up. And if people are bought in kind of on the long-term journey, then they're really rooting for you just like they would for a hero. And I think that also comes into play. This is something that I'm terrible at, but that same structure comes into play, you know, when you write specific posts or when you write specific threads. You know, you want to always try and have that conflict, that causality, that character to make it interesting. So it's kind of also on the short term and also on the longer term.
It's a long-term trust building exercise that consists of small but always genuine little parts, right? It's like every time you post something about your reality, you're building this long-term trust. And it's hard, and I completely agree with you, it's super hard to do this right, because you can over-engineer it, you can over-structure it because you want it to have like maximum impact, you know, because we all want high engagement on our tweets and we all want people to follow us because we're so super intelligent, so witty and fun and always on. But I think that is way too much. Like I love to read tweets or articles by people who just share how much their life sucks at the moment. That is just honest. It's super relatable. Like, I've been through burnout multiple times in my life. I know what it feels like to not want to continue. And then to take the courage to write it out, which is already hard. It's already hard to admit to yourself that you're at that point. But then actually sharing it in public, that is incredibly, that's a Gryffindor move right there, right? That is super, super courageous. And it's for the benefit of the team. Because you share this with other founders, they see themselves in this, and they understand that it's fine to feel these things, to power through it, to overcome it, or to just step back from a moment, just to reflect on what is going on. Like the person writing an article has reflected on what's going on. This invites reflection in other people, and that can only be good, right? When you think about what's going on and you try to find a better way out of it, that's a benefit. If you can teach that through your own building in public, you are doing a great service to community. And I think that's what building in public and what just sharing your journey really is about. It's not really about you and your journey. You're just contributing to the greater movement that is happening, which is entrepreneurship, the creator economy, where people can build things that actually sustain their lives without having to be dependent on somebody else. And if you can do this a little bit, if you can encourage, I don't know, if you can encourage two people to build a business while you are building yours, you have just doubled the amount or tripled the amount of people who are building a business, like the three of them, right? So it's like anything you can do to encourage other people to go on that journey, try it out, see if it's for them. Maybe it's not, maybe it is. Doesn't matter. If they never tried, they never will see, right? So if you can get people to get to this point where they try it out and maybe struggle and then overcome their issues, awesome. That's what it's about. It's community empowerment. That's kind of how I think about what I'm doing. Because my journey, as interesting as it may be to some, I don't personally think it's very interesting. I get up in the morning, I have a coffee, I watch a lot of Star Trek all day, and then sometimes I write. Apparently that is called prolific because I end up with an article every week and I have a podcast that is just me reading that article into this microphone. And a couple months in the future, I will have written enough little articles so I can put them together in a book and then call that an info product. It's just, that's how I roll, right? That's what my life is like. It's not particularly interesting, but it's super enjoyable to me. And to be able to share this and maybe excite other people to go on a similar journey, that is more important to me than having, I don't know, like 100 followers a day or selling more books. I don't really care much about that. I mean, I sold a business in the past. Financial security was a goal and we got there and that was great. So I'm not really looking at the money aspect as much right now. I'm really just looking at the community empowerment aspect. So that's one of the things, and sorry for going into yet another tangent. One of the things that I learned quite early when after we sold our business, Feedback Panda, we had a little software as a service business that we sold in 2019. We being my girlfriend and I, we had built that over 2 years and sold it to a private equity company. And after that, I was thinking, what can I do with my life that gives me the same amount of passion and joy that serving these 5,000 online teachers, that was our customer base, did for me over the last 2 years. And then I found, well, I learned a lot from people who were on podcasts, who shared their story, who wrote books about it, like Rob Walling, Start Small, Stay Small, or Justin Jackson, who has the Build SaaS podcast, and people who were sharing their journeys while they were on them. I found that incredibly amazing. They were busy 24/7 and then still found time to teach what they had learned. Incredible. Like, these are the giants on whose shoulders I was standing when I built my business. And after we sold it, I, in a maybe a selfish way, I was thinking, now I have to be that giant for others, right? It's both kind of selfless in trying to be community minded, but also selfish in terms of building your personal brand. But I think it's acceptable to do things that are both a little selfish and a little bit selfless. It's how we, I think it's just an incentive thing. But I wanted to be that person for other people. I wanted to be the person who shared what they learned, and then other people could learn and build their own thing at the same time as I had already done it before. So that's where my willingness to write came from. And that then translated into me writing these articles, writing these books. And I'm still doing this because I just enjoy seeing people learning and then telling me about what they've done. That is one of the greatest joys that I get whenever somebody writes to me in a DM on Twitter or shares something with the community and mentions me because some part of my book, maybe a phrase, maybe a chapter, maybe the book itself has motivated them to build a business. That is when I start smiling and just jumping and skipping through my house, like quite literally. So because it's...
This is the answer to the question we got on Twitter from, I think, Heisenberg, at Heisenberg, mm-hmm. who asked, what keeps you going? And I'm going to guess that this is what keeps you going.
More than anything else. I don't look at my Twitter follower numbers. They always go up. Apparently, being nice to people is a good way to build an audience. I don't look at my book sales too much. I do it for tax reasons more than anything else. But I don't over optimize for that either, but what I look for is people actually, my work having made an impact in people's lives. That's what I look for. And when I see this, that is what motivates me like nothing else. Yeah.
Cool. Very cool. I very much connect with that message. I think it connects a lot to at least how I think about building in public, but let's take a step back because I want us to you touched on a lot of different points, and I kind of want to peel back each one of them. So
sure.
I've heard a few definitions that you've kind of used for building in public, and I know also that in your writing you use audience first building, right? And I'm wondering, A, is there a difference between the two, and B, how would you define both one of them? Because we've kind of mentioned, building in public is creating that narrative over a long time and building your trust. Mm-hmm. But there's also been being transparent or kind of sending that karma out into the world, whether that's sharing your vulnerability and your weaknesses or also just kind of paying it forward and being positive. But I also know that, you write kind of against that founders have to be vulnerable all the time. And clearly this is a spectrum. So let's start with, a definition, like a short one, and then we can dive into each of those topics.
Sure. Yeah. Oh, definition is always a problem and always, always interesting to talk about because I have this feeling, and I'll get to the definitions in a second, that within our community, we are almost constantly redefining what things mean because it's such a flexible thing. Like the entrepreneurial community, when we talk about audience today, to me, it means something very different from what audience meant 10 years ago. And let's start with that, because audience is going to be a central part, both in building a public and the audience first approach to entrepreneurship. To me, an audience is anybody who should be interested in you, your product, or your business. And that is as quick as it gets, because you have definitions that go back to the Latin root of the word, people who are listening, right? Like audere. It's like, yes, but like obviously people 2000 years ago may have understood very differently what it even means to communicate. Like they had no grasp of the fact that you could easily put whatever your thoughts were on a central platform, and then billions of people in the world could read it immediately, right? Maybe we should not use their definitions of the basic concept of that for our current entrepreneurial usage of the term.
Right. So and the definitions change. They change. And different people have different definitions. So,
and who knows what audience will mean in the world of virtual reality? Maybe or if you want to go into more sci-fi topics, the closer we get to singularity, the moment where everything is one, right? Like we are already getting very close, because we constantly interconnected. We have systems that can notify us immediately when something happens to us or with us or with our peers or with people that we care about. That is very, very close to the singularity if you look at it from like 200 years in the past. Imagine a time before the telephone, before telegrams even, when you wanted to communicate with somebody. You would have to write them a letter and then hope that somewhere between where you give this letter to your postmaster and wherever the letter is supposed to be received, everybody did their job in taking your little letter and carrying it to the next station where it would be dispatched to the next, right? Like that was a really, really delayed communication system, and people were perfectly fine with hearing about news 2 months after they happened. And now we have news and we complain when we hear about them 30 seconds after they happened, because we could have learned about them earlier. Like the time frame is shrinking, it's compressing incredibly. And to me, if I were living in, I don't know, 18th century Europe, and I was imagining the singularity, this would be it, right? It's not that everything is immediate. Quasi-immediacy is already close enough to unimaginable from that perspective. So, and it's kind of the technology has changed that our definitions of of immediacy is different, right? Yeah. Like immediacy used to be as soon as possible. Now it's quite literally seconds after. And we need to make sure that our definitions still fit those terms, which is why audience, I define it as, yeah, somebody, anybody who should be interested in what I'm doing and the person that wants to build the audience is doing. Audience first, this as it's also an almost a binary definition for me, because I feel this is almost a little wordplay in there. Audience first could mean build an audience first and then sell them something. That's kind of the common definition of it. What I would like it to mean is build for your audience first, build with your audience in mind at all times, like put your audience first, right? Not build the audience first, but put your audience first in anything you're building, which means the audience will always be the core piece of whatever your strategy is. And everything you do is because of feedback cycles with your audience, which also makes building in public a different definition. Because if audience first means putting your audience first in everything you do, everything you conceptualize, every feature you build, every business product you build, every communication strategy that you employ, then building in public is one communication strategy within the whole audience first cosmos, right? There is multiple different ways of approaching this.
Building in public, I was going to say it's a tool in your toolkit.
Absolutely. And it being a tool also means that it is only applicable to certain kinds of things. Right? Many people in the building public world would like everybody to be super transparent about everything at all times. And I understand that. We live in a world where everything around us is quite opaque and they treat us as if we're trash. Now, if you ever have called customer service for a major telecommunication system, be that Bell here in Canada or AT&T in the States or something, you are treated like you're worthless, because you quite literally are just somewhere in the margins, right? Nobody cares about this one additional customer. Like if they go somewhere else, doesn't matter, it won't impact us as much. Let's just, you know, ignore people. That seems to be the customer service main theme that is going on. And I hate being treated like that. And I would like for companies to not treat me like that. So obviously, by having people be more responsible, by having people be more transparent, this could be solved. Because if people would actually care about their customers enough to share what's going on, then we could expect to be treated a little bit humanely, more humanely than we are right now. And I see this a lot being brought up whenever we talk about building in public, because people are so fed up with all these businesses treating them like that they want every new business to be the complete reversal, to be the inverse of that, to be super open, super transparent, to be, yeah, very much the ideal company that they imagine. What many people forget is that there's a human being there somewhere, that there's a founder that has doubts, that has fears, that has vulnerabilities, and is building a new business with very little funding in a potentially quite competitive landscape. So if you're just sharing everything at all times, you're just opening the floodgates to, you know, other people who are trying to suppress you, trying to kick you out of the business or whatever. So there is a certain limit to what you should be sharing when you're building in public. Just a healthy baseline of secrets that you keep for your own business, right? Coca-Cola doesn't share their recipe. Well, maybe you shouldn't share yours either. You can share how you handle logistics, how you do marketing, or whatever it is. You don't need to be completely secret at all times, but some things are for you to keep to yourselves if you want to stay in business. And then over time, when you develop a bigger budget, or when you develop more insight into how much you can share and how much you can do these little experiments with opening up. But I feel that I want everybody to be comfortable doing what they're doing. Right? If they build in public, they should build as much as they want and not more. Even though somebody else out there might expect you to share more, it's your choice. You're the founder. You're responsible for what you're doing. So yeah, that there is this kind of limit. So building in public being a tool, that's kind of why I mentioned this. It's applicable to certain kinds of businesses at certain stages of that business. You will see that most businesses who build in public stop sharing certain numbers or certain strategies at a particular point, around $20,000 to $30,000 in monthly recurring revenue for US companies, for example, because they see that at that point, the people who follow them, the people who are joining their narrative, who are invested in their narrative, they start seeing opportunities for competing with your business. There is all of a sudden too much sharing going on that can actually hurt your business because other people get to benefit from it in a financial way. Some businesses like that. Some businesses are so clear with their journey that they share so much in their space. They say, here's an opportunity, there's an opportunity, because they want people to actually fill those opportunities with solutions. And other businesses, they overshare, and all of a sudden there's a competitor that takes part of the customer base. So there's this point where people start shutting down, become more general, and share more generalized stories. They talk more about the journey as a coherent narrative and the steps they went through, instead of sharing what's going on right now. And that's perfectly fine too. There is no right way or wrong way to building in public. There is only a way that is community-minded and community empowering, right? And that's all you need to be doing,
right? So I agree, by the way, 100% that people should do what works for them. You should never be pressured into building in public in a certain way that doesn't work for you, especially because it's often, you know, our personal social media handles, like, this is us online. You should never be doing anything that you don't. What I'm curious about or kind of thinking through is, what's the difference between when building in public is a marketing tool in your toolkit? What makes a difference than classic marketing, except for that the content might be different? And I'll kind of phrase this in a different way, which is, or at least for me personally, I think a lot of the value in building in public is being able to see things that would not normally be shared on a regular marketing blog, right? Everyone's great at writing a post about how we aced our product hunt launch, right? Yeah. Here's what we did. Here's what we did. You know, we were so great. Not many people share actually, like, what happened at the end of the day? Like, how many signups did you get? Was it worth the effort? What did you screw up, or what did you, you know, what did you really learn? And I come from a, like a venture back background. And so the question becomes even, you know, sharper and worse in the sense that in the venture backed startup scene, you almost never see founders sharing bad numbers. And that also has to do with the business model, but also in the kind of the indie bootstrapper place, that's not something you see often.
Yep.
And I wonder if that, you know, scrapes away at the authenticity, which is the edge that it has, right? That it is personal, that it is trustworthy. And maybe it doesn't matter, right? Maybe people share what they want. And if you share your success stories and if they're interesting enough, that will find some audience, and that's what people listen to it. And, you know, people like me will go look for other things that are kind of more vulnerable. And that's also perfectly okay. I'm just wondering how you think about that.
Well, I think you just pointed out two things in the last two sentences that you said. One was trust, like the relevance of trust. And the other thing was you find the audience for whatever you're doing, right? Like, and that reminds me of something. I was just thinking about this. Look at look at people who are interested in sports, like your favorite sports team. There is different layers of fans, right? There are fans that are enjoying the game and they see a successful team and they become a fan of the successful team because they like people having success. They like to see the best at the sport, at what they're doing, like to watch them, like to cheer them on and see them be even better. That is a certain level of fan. And then there's the fan that sticks with their team even when they're the last in the league. That sticks with their team when they get relegated two leagues down, like my hometown of Dresden did in the soccer team back in the 90s. It happened, and many, many people went to a different team in Germany, right? Because like it was there's the Bundesliga, which is our Premier League, and they were playing in that league, and then they got relegated into the third league. They even skipped the second because there was a whole scandal there somewhere. And you could see how the fans of that team split into two groups. One group went to the next best, almost local Bundesliga team, and the other group stuck with our hometown club. And they are still there. They have since moved into the second league again over the last 20 years, right? But it doesn't really matter what that particular story is about. What I'm interested in is to see these two very different groups of fans that are both fans of the team, right? They both go to the games, they both buy the scarves, they both like, you know, they both support the team, but only with certain conditions. And what I'm interested in is to have those fans that stick with me even when I'm down, when I'm relegated, into building a new business from scratch because the first one didn't work out, or when I have burnout and I need just 2 months off. Those people stick with me. Other people move on, right? So that's the difference, and that's the kind of 1,000 true fan. A true fans story where you don't need a million fans that barely care about you. You will see this a lot on Twitter too. There are accounts out there that have millions of followers, but get like 50 likes on their posts because nobody is engaged. And then you have people who have 1,000, 2,000 followers. They get 100 likes on their posts because every single person who follows them cares about what they're doing. And in the end, these people have more engagement, they have more opportunity, and they have deeper and more meaningful relationships with their followers because their followers trust them. They trust that whatever is created by this person on Twitter is valuable, it's meaningful, it's intentional. It's not just there because they need more clicks or they need to sell something. They say this because they truthfully feel it. They think somebody can benefit from it. It's going to be inspirational or insightful or instructive, whatever it is. It's something that has meaning to the people listening. And that is what I feel is the difference between these two. And that's what building in public really is making, what good or authentic building in public really is about. It's making a difference with what you're doing for the people who you want to serve. Because you can have the world as your audience, and you would be really, really hard-pressed to be able to make everyone happy at the same time. But the moment you niche down, you say, well, I won't serve everybody, but I will help indie founders who are starting to build their businesses. Well, now you don't need to write for other indie founders who already have their businesses or you don't need to write for or create for VC-backed businesses. You don't need to do that anymore. Now you can really focus on indie founders who are just starting out. A group of people that may just be 100, 200,000 people on Earth, who knows, probably a bit more, but you know, it's not billions of people. There's a ceiling, but everybody is kind of in the same boat. So whenever you find a common problem there, you can be quite sure that everybody knows what you're talking about. And if you solve that one problem, you just solved it for this distinct group of people in a way that everybody can learn from. And I think that makes a big difference, because you cannot find your true fans by being generic. You find your true fans by being precise and by being authentic like them. They need to find you relatable to their journey. And their journey is full of, yeah, like I said, full of failure, full of doubt, full of skepticism and fear. Well, why not share that part of your own journey if you want them to relate to you, right? And usually that is how people relate with founders on a much, much deeper level. And from that comes a much, much stronger relationship over time. I know in my own following, which is now somewhere around 40,000 people, which is mind-blowing to me. I don't know how that happened, but it did. That I still see people engage with me who've been there 3 years ago when I just started out with like 200 followers. That was really, I see these people still that have been around from day one, and they still are with me, and they know my whole journey, and they still help me when I have a question. They still retweet my stuff when I ask for it, right? This is a relationship that I have with those people. I see their profile picture, and in my mind, I see all the conversations that we had over time. I have a relationship with this person. I may never have met them in real life at a conference or anything. Maybe I've seen them or something, but I never had an interaction with them. But on Twitter, I have. And that interaction is good enough for me to always be there when they need me. That's the relationship that I want to build with everybody that follows me, that I follow.
Right. So this point, I think, is very profound, and I'd like to kind of zoom in on, because I think without a doubt, we live in a time where, you know, you're talking about the kind of the spectrum of time forwards and backwards, the singularity, but we live in a time today where it's harder to find those genuine connections online, because we're surrounded by, it's not necessarily fake news, but it's, you know, it's always looking at the news from a specific point of view. And that's why I think vulnerability has so much power, right? Sharing your struggles, sharing your doubts, sharing those dark moments. And for me personally, I think this is one of the huge plus sides of building in public, which is, yeah, we're all struggling through the same problems. It helps to share. It helps to know you're not the only one in that place. And it helps to be able to pay it forward. And this connects to the startup ecosystem that I'm in, where when I sit one-on-one with friends who are entrepreneurs, everyone suffers from imposter syndrome. Everyone suffers from, you know, how sucky it is to build a startup or, you know, being an entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. And yet online, that never shows up. Right. And I think that's one of the big benefits to building in public. And yet most of the building in public that I see is not that. And it does connect to share what you feel comfortable sharing, and you'll find an audience for, you know, I don't want to say this is the right way to do it, because it's clearly there are many, many right ways to do it. But I'm wondering, like, what you think about that kind of contrast between people clearly love the vulnerability, right, and want to be able to share, but it's only like a small subset of a small subset of the posts that we see.
I try to kind of hint of that with my two different kinds of fans analogy just now, because like if you want to have a lot of fans, then obviously sharing your successes and framing it in this kind of positive, super celebratory mindset will get you more followers, right? Like if you project confidence, and you project like unending confidence and having this golden touch with whatever you do, people will follow you because they think that's true. And then at some point they will be disappointed and fall off. That's always a thing too. So you just have to keep your churn low and come up with even grander stories. You kind of, you know, it turns into this kind of narrative generating machine where you have to become more and more successful. And then you start inventing stuff. I don't want to get into who is doing this in our community and who is kind of overestimating their own capabilities, but you have these people out there.
Yeah.
And I think this is where gurudom started. It's where people start becoming gurus, self-determined or self-appointed gurus. I mean, like if people call you that because they trust you, that's a different story. But if you act like you are one, and then you come up with the narrative to sustain that, you know, you start building up this projection of who you want to be but are not. And that attracts people who also want to be like that and are not. And I'm not sure if that's the right way to do it. I personally don't like it because I don't want to project a false image of myself. And I don't want to invite people who are interested in false images of other people. It's kind of the same. And I think most of what marketing has become, just because it's been such a cutthroat competitive landscape, has been a hyper-optimized strategy to sell products in the market, right? If you look at marketing today, everything is super optimized for conversion rates, for the funnel. And the funnel usually starts with trying to target as many people as possible and then narrow them down until the sale happens. So all marketing, in a way, is trying to have massive reach, massive distribution, and then in some way narrow down whoever clicks on it because they've seen it and liked it, and then they put it in the, you know, the cart, and then some of them buy, and then some of them actually have it. And like that the whole funnel of marketing is trying to get as much reach as possible and then narrow it down over time. I don't think brand building needs to be like this. I don't think you need to appeal to as many people as possible and then have like 1% of them be interested enough in buying your product. I think there are so many niches in niches, right? You have like the indie hacker niche, you have the solopreneur indie hacker niche, the team indie hacker niche, you have the indie hacker but wants to maybe get into VC funding later niche. There is so much micro niching that you could do that you could easily find a niche of hundreds of thousands of people that are exactly interested in what you're doing, and you don't need to overreach. Whenever I talk about Feedback Panda, that little SaaS business that I founded, co-founded with my partner, Danielle, she was an online English teacher, and we came up with this definition of our product. It was an online education tool, like an optimization tool for online English teachers who were teaching English as a second language to Chinese children through a web-based platform run by a Chinese online kid English education companies. That was the definition of our business. Like, it was seven layers of niching down, all kinds of stuff. And that allowed us still to grow to thousands of customers, build a $55,000 monthly recurring revenue business within 2 years in that little niche, then sell it for a life-changing amount of money. If that is enough, then you don't need to reach everybody, right? You can be very specific, and you can get very specific by finding people just like you, or finding the people that are just like that one persona that you want to help. Doesn't have to be you, could be anybody else, just as long as you find this homogenous group, this tribe of people that are all the same, that are interconnected, they all know each other, there's communities around it, there's community leaders and followers and agitators and catalysts and facilitators. If you find that community of like-minded people and you offer something that solves one of the critical problems, it's all you need to do. And to build a brand in that community, to become an expert within that little community, you don't need to do much more than be part of that community and be prolific at helping them, empowering them, engaging with them where they are, and supplying them with something that they need. So that happens on an interpersonal level. And that is where vulnerability comes in, right? Vulnerability being unsure of yourself, being open about the negative stuff, that in a community is much easier. Because if you look at marketing, that usually is not a community-minded approach. It's a shotgun approach. And you try to find people with the demographics or however the ad platforms that you're using are trying to target people. But if you go into a community and you don't immediately start selling, but you start understanding the community and you figure out what their problems are, you build tools for that and you sell it through your community presence, you don't need the shotgun approach, right? But you need to have a relationship with people in the community for them not to kick you out. Like if you've ever been on Reddit and you ever tried to sell anything on Reddit, like you can post and 10 seconds later, you're kicked out of the community because these people really are defensive about not wanting marketers in their communities. But if you are on Reddit, you're a Redditor, you're active, you're in that community for months, sometimes years, and then you slowly encourage people to look at the thing you're building. This is not an ad. I just want feedback. That works because people trust you. To get trust, you have to be a real person. And to be a real person, you have to show the good and the bad, really.
So A, that was a little piece of marketing gold wisdom in terms of the nicher, the better. And and yes, because the internet is so big, even the tiniest of niches is large enough. I think that's something I constantly try and keep front and center, and I constantly forget. So that's something
Because we've been primed, right? We've been primed to look at the more, the better. It's I don't know. It's always been like that in school or just through the businesses that we worked in, right? The more we could produce, the more we could gain, the more people's eyes we could get on our project, the better. Because incentives were always aligned with this, but it doesn't have to be like that.
Right. I think also a lot of the apps that we use or the businesses that we see and try to emulate, we already see them at a stage where they're very broad and big, right? You don't see... None of us have seen Coke when it was just selling, you know, Coke in four different kiosks or something like that. And so that's a great, great, great lesson to keep front and center. The second thing, I now understand what you meant in your analogy between the soccer, the Bundesliga, and the different sports teams, which I didn't get the first time. I feel like I have an answer to this question already, but I'm wondering if there has been a difference in how you approach your audience first approach and you're building in public now versus 3 years ago, that you have grown from, you know, however many followers it was back then to 40,000 now?
That's a good question. I don't think so. I think I'm still talking about whatever I want to talk about. What I know now is that it reaches more people. So I'm trying to be more inclusive. That's one of the things that I'm more aware of the fact that I need to be inclusive and thoughtful about what I post. Like with an audience of some tens of thousands of people, the chance of being misunderstood, that goes up because, you know, people have their own perspective, and the more perspectives land on one particular piece of content that you produce, the likelier it is that it is misunderstood. So I try to cover my bases a bit more, but in all other regards, I think I'm still trying to project that I am just a person doing this because they enjoy it, and not because I'm particularly good at it either. It's just that I'm becoming better at it every day, and that is the journey, right? It's kind of, I enjoy learning stuff every single day and then teaching it immediately, because from teaching it, I also get to see how people learn their version of it, and then they teach me what they learned, and then I learn again, and then I get to teach. It's this kind of learn teach loop that I love to do, in particularly through building in public. It's just so nice to learn something, immediately share it, see other people learning it, and then learning something from that. It's just mind blowing because it's the exact opposite of school, you know, where somebody tells you truth and you're supposed to believe it, not question it, regurgitate it, and then forget it. It's kind of the exact opposite, because you see the immediate consequence of sharing something by people trying it out, by people telling you, I did this, didn't work for me. You get immediate feedback. Then you reposition your perspective on this thing throughout this whole loop happening over and over again. And you come out of it better because you have reality tested something that you only believed in an abstract way or in a theoretical fashion before. So it's amazing. Like you're literally iterating your knowledge by building in public, where in school you gained knowledge, and if you gained it correctly, you got good grades, right? It's very much a different approach to lifelong learning, and which is why I'm doing it all the time, because that to me is lifelong learning. Is lifelong teaching is lifelong learning, because you never stop, right? It always comes back, and you modify it, you change it. I'm right now in the process of coming up with an online course for building a Twitter audience, because I feel at this point it's okay for me to do it. I'm still dealing with self-doubt at this point because, oh, there's already courses out there. And oh, what are people going to think if the guy who built a Twitter audience is now talking about Twitter audiences? Is this going to be lame or is it not? But I believe that there are more people out there who could benefit from building an honest, genuine audience, like relationships with people on Twitter. And I can teach them that a little bit. And that's better than me feeling self-conscious about maybe should I do it or shouldn't I do it, right? It's that is always going to be part of entrepreneurship, the self-doubt, the imposter syndrome stuff. And I'm just compartmentalizing it, putting it away for now. And then I'm diving more into building what I actually want to do because this will help. And if it just helps 10 people build an audience of a couple thousand people that help them become a better person, all I want. Doesn't matter. If I spend 200 hours recording this for 10 people to get a couple thousand followers, worth it. You know, right. Because that's my impact that I want to have on the world.
And just like you said, there's people out there in your niche, in your small audience, who want to learn how to do Twitter like you do Twitter. And there could be 15 other courses out there and it's still relevant. And I completely, completely loved what you said about learning is teaching, because nothing forces us to internalize concepts than trying to tell them to someone else, to share them.
Oh, man.
It forces us to really, really come to terms with them. It's actually one of the things that, you know, we're trying to implement at ALP in our audio courses, which is a way, because, you know, audio is very passive. You're just listening. And if there's a way to force people to share and to teach what they've consumed, that makes them an active part of the learning. And I think there's some really cool stuff that can be done around that, because that's what makes the learning really, really, really stick.
I love that. That's a really important thing too. I think audio content is, for me, one of the most accessible kinds of content. I mean, I love reading and I love watching videos, but nothing beats like having somebody talk to you in your own mind, which is, that is almost literally mind blowing, right? Like you have this voice in your mind that is not yours, but it is, because your mind thinks it is. So you internalize it better. You don't see somebody talking to you. You're literally talking to yourself with stuff you didn't know before. That is just wonderful. Right? Isn't technology amazing? I don't know. Yeah. It's just something I think it's just really cool.
It is. And like, that's, you know, that's why I'm doing audio, like ALP is an audio course platform, because I'm so bought into it. Because it's, you know, the power of audio is just incredible, how it fits into your daily life, how, you know, how it's intimate, it's in your ear. It's something you can take with you everywhere.
And it's relational. I think listening to somebody's voice, sorry for interrupting you, but I need to say this. Listening to somebody's voice is, that is on a such a basic human level, connecting you with that person. Like, your voice is now added to my repertoire of people that I trust, right? Just from having this really, really enjoyable conversation with you right now. I will never forget this, because that is just how my mind, it's just going to save that somewhere. And if I listen to your voice again, oh yeah, that guy, love that, right? That's just gonna how that works. And it's the same for the podcast that I listened to while I was still employed as a software engineer in Germany back in 2015, 16, just before we started building Feedback Panda. I had this little two and a half hour commute that I went on three times a week. It was quite a lot of time to spend sitting on a train. And I was just listening to podcasts over and over again. All kinds, like the Indie Hackers podcast and, you know, all the SaaS podcasts that were out there, because I was just interested in that as a software engineer building a SaaS product, but also as a soon-to-be entrepreneur building his own little business. So I had all these voices of people genuinely telling their story, and that left this, I don't know how to describe it, but what those people talked to me about without talking to me, because they were obviously talking to a host of a show, right? They didn't know I was listening, but I was consuming it as if they were talking to me. And that stuck with me so much more than all the books that I've ever read, which is why my books are also available as audiobooks, because I knew, right, that I had to be able to produce this to allow people to have this experience with what I wanted to talk to them about. And this is also why everything that I write every week, I often painfully narrate into a podcast, because I know that some people, they read and forget, but they listen and they retain. So that's why I have a podcast too. And I really enjoy it. First off, it's an editing experience for me. So anybody who's writing, highly recommend taking what you're writing and narrating it into a podcast. You will find opportunity to edit while you're talking to yourself, because you're just going to think, who wrote this? What is this supposed to mean? And then if you're quick on your feet, you come up with a better version while you narrate it, and that goes back into your article. So it's a really cool thing for me as well. But I started the podcast quite literally because somebody told me, I have dyslexia, I have trouble reading, but I love what you're writing. And and there I was sitting in front of my Twitter DM when that person wrote to me, and I was thinking, oh my God, they're trying so hard to read my article, but they can't really do it in a way that is sustainable for them. I need to make this more accessible for those people who have trouble reading or no time reading, whatever the reason is. And then I started recording it and I noticed, oh wow, this is actually editing. Awesome. So it was a whole win-win situation for everybody involved. But I love doing this. I love my weekly podcast recording. And now, honestly, this is probably one of the more profitable parts of my business too, because a podcast sponsor really likes to pay good money to have their message read to people in my voice, because they like my voice. They trust my voice. They trust whatever I talk to them about, which opens up a whole other can of worms about who I want to sponsor my podcast. But it's okay at this point. I find a lot of interesting sponsors, but you know, that all of a sudden turns it into a profitable endeavor. Like I make four figures on my podcast every month, and I have a couple hundred listeners, you know, niche and trust, long-term relationship building. So I highly recommend going audio.
Yeah, the editing process is something that, like, every audio course we do, the final editing process is literally sitting down, reading it out loud and editing it, because you're right. It's such a critical part of editing, and you find out when you're writing to be fancy and not when you're writing to be coherent. It's a great part of the editing process.
And it's something that has been around for quite a while. Like if you look at TV shows or movies, the table reads that they do, that's quite literally like what happens before anybody starts acting out the episode. They sit around the table, they all have the script, and they read their roles to get used to the flow, to get iron out the kinks, to see how it actually works out in reality. Like it's a great step that Hollywood has been using for decades. And now in the podcasting audio space, we are rediscovering this for us as well. I think it's really nice and it's really helpful. And it's allowing you to repurpose your content. Like from an individual creator's perspective, like it takes maybe an hour to record and edit a podcast episode if you're not too picky about quality. Like I usually do one take sessions only. Like I start reading my script. If I read the wrong word, I just correct myself and have a little chuckle, and that's part of the show. Also, again, relatable, right? I don't want to over-engineer my content. I just want to...
I want to see bloopers at the end.
Yeah, blooper. Yeah. I don't need a blooper reel. The whole thing is a blooper reel. So that's the thing. And I think it's going to be different for if I go more into instructional video content. I might want to optimize that there as well, but who knows? Like maybe I'm not. Like maybe this is going to be the one course where the bloopers are part of the thing. We'll see about that. But it's an important thing for me to also have that be something that is realistically me. My podcast is not this over-engineered, optimized podcast. It's me reading the thing that I write because I care about the topic. And that resonates with certain people more than with others. And those are also the people that I wanted to resonate with. So right. It's on purpose. It's like amateur-ish, which I don't think it is, but ish, right? On purpose to find the people who know that not everything is perfect.
I think it's leaning into the media source, actually. Yeah. I don't think it's amateurish at all. I think it's podcasts. The strength is just like you said, it's your voice. It's your style. It's that trust. And it's a voice they hear week after week after week. Mm-hmm. So it's actually, I think, a much better way for the format to come across. And that's how you are prolific, even though you're watching Star Trek from morning till dusk, you know, <That's right. laughs> you're repurposing. It's a smart, it's the right content strategy. So Arvid, I think we're getting to our end.
Sure.
Other than at Arvid Kahl on Twitter and the podcast and the newsletter, And where can blog. People and the blog and the two books, the embedded entrepreneur, right? How, you know, I guess any of those places are good places for people to find you. When and where is this Twitter course coming out?
Oh, I have no idea. I'm still dealing with the title at this point. Like, honestly, I have the tagline for it, what it's going to be. Now I'm honestly quite literally right now, like earlier, just 2 hours ago, still brainstorming my title. And I'm probably going to go back into brainstorming my title right now. And then I'm just going to put up a landing page. So this should be over the next couple of days or weeks. I'm no rush either, which is one of the great things about being in this post-exit position. I don't need to push myself. Other than wanting to get stuff done, you know, on a fictional timeline, I have no timelines. Like, I have no deadlines because I'm the only person in my life that is setting deadlines. But I do want to get this out within the next couple of months, because I have more interesting projects in my future that revolve around video course-based instruction. And I want to learn how to do a course by doing a course. You know, it's kind of the whole self-teaching methodology. I learned how to code by teaching myself. I learned how to write by teaching myself. And I'm going to do the whole course instructional thing as well by just jumping into it. But I hope you'll find that on my Twitter bio in the future as well. Honestly, Twitter is the place where I'm at. That is where I talk about everything that I do. So please do check out my Twitter profile. If you like it, do follow. If you don't like it, also follow and then tell me why you don't like it. But it's really just find me somewhere and look into what I'm doing. If it resonates, then I'd be happy to keep chatting about that. And my DMs are open. Like, any question about anything that I talked about today, just throw it to me on Twitter and I'm going to give you an answer.
Amazing. Well, thanks so much for coming on the Mountain Pass.
It was a pleasure. Thank you so much.